Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the JF Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. And by the Tennessee Republican Assembly, a socially, morally, and fiscally conservative group of individuals committed to upholding traditional Republican ideals that represent the American founders' original intent. We believe in God, family, and country. We believe in principles over politics. The TRA is the only rhino-free Republican organization in Tennessee. Visit our website at tnra.org. That's tnra.org. The phone number to call in and join the conversation is 718-305-716. That's 718-305-7176. And thank you for being with us tonight. We have some great guests lined up for us. We've got Joanne Bregman, who is one of the most knowledgeable people on the issue of refugee resettlement in the state. And that's going to come into play with what's going on our borders. So we'll be talking to her, and she's going to give us some insights that I guarantee you won't get anywhere else. And a little later on, we're going to have Courtney Rogers from the 40. She currently holds the Tennessee House seat in the 45th District. Talk to her about some issues and her campaign, of course. And a little later on, Sharon Ford, president of the TRA, will talk about their recent endorsing convention. And we'll close our show out with John Smith, who is, Big John Smith, who is running for the 5th Congressional seat here in Tennessee. So once again, thanks for being with us. And we've got a lot on the plate. I do have to give you just a little bit of information on some upcoming events. This Saturday, July 12th, in Stewart County, the Stewart County Visitor Center on Highway 79 is the Reagan Day Freedom Fest. This is a joint Stewart County Tea Party and GOP event. We will be presenting May Beavers the Wheelbarrow Award for all of her hard work for the conservative cause, and John Harris, president of the TFA, will be speaking as well. Hope to see you there. No charge, free food, donations accepted and appreciated. Bill Warner will be speaking in Clarksville on Monday, July the 14th, 7 p.m. at the Women's Club, 1983 Madison Street, Clarksville, Tennessee. That's one of the first guests for the Clarksville ACTS chapter, and you need to register for your tickets at actclarksville@gmail.com. That's actclarksville@gmail.com. And now we're ready for our first guest, and we have Joanne Bregman with us, and we're going to talk with Joanne about what's going on with refugee resettlement here in Tennessee. Joanne, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you.
Really, the reason this is bubbling up again is directly related to what's happening on the southern border. And I really think that in many ways it's even worse, because when we look at the predicted expected numbers, I think what's at the core of all of this are the issues about federalism, the 10th Amendment, states' rights. So that's kind of the big overarching, overlay of this. And I've talked about this before within the context of simply just the refugee resettlement program. But I think the border surge shows us how illegal immigration and refugee resettlement intersect. But it also causes a lot of confusion. So what I thought we could do tonight is really bring some clarity to that, to where the confusion lies, because I do think that it's imperative for citizens, and I would hope elected officials, to understand what's relevant about the immigration classifications that are implicated here, and really what that really means. So, first I would say let's just talk generally, categories that where we refer to as immigrants, and the easiest one are illegal immigrants. I mean, they have no right of entry
and the most
into the
plentiful
United States. Yeah, well, maybe not for long. but they have no right of entry to the United States under any kind of program, okay, because we have many, many different categories where people can legally enter the country in a variety of statuses and for different lengths of time, some indefinitely. The next category is refugees, and I would venture to guess that your listening audience is a little more familiar with this category because we've talked about it, but it is a category of legal immigration, and it means that these folks that come in under this program are legally present in the United States, and they also have other designations. They are designated as qualified aliens for purposes of being able to apply for public benefits like SSI and 10 Care, cash welfare, and food stamps. So that's a very, very important classification. And then we get to what are called the UACs, the unaccompanied alien children, and we'll refer to them as UACs. Now, that's really the category where you see the intersection between illegal immigration and refugee resettlement, and that's really what's dominated the conversation now about what's happening at the border. But these are minors under the age of 18, and when they enter the country illegally, because they do, you know, when they cross that border, they have entered illegally, but their status once they cross the border and are apprehended by border agents, their status, as long as they're not Mexican or Canadian, because if they are, they have to go, they go right back under certain agreements that the United States has with those countries. And so that's kind of the catch and release program, if you will. But once they cross the border, even though they cross illegally, they become what we would refer to as sort of conditional refugees. Okay, they're not necessarily refugees, but they're treated like they are until a determination is made of whether or not they can stay or whether or not they have to be deported. So
that's a federal law.
For example, that is a federal law. That is a result of a federal law that actually another Tennessean, Don Barnett, who was on the radio this morning, actually wrote about in 2004, because when the law was changed in the United States, Don, who's been researching and writing on this topic for many, many years, actually said with the change and the change in the status of how we treat the unaccompanied minors, we will create an incentive or a magnet to create greater numbers trying to cross the border illegally. So essentially, you know, quickly the process is they come over the border, and when they come from places like Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador, which is what's happening now, they're processed. They're apprehended by Border Patrol, and they get processed, but then they are turned over within 3 days. That's a designated timeline. I can't tell you how well that's adhered to, but they're turned over to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, okay? And that means, I'll translate that for you, but that means that they are turned over to the U.S. Office of Refugee Resettlement. The U.S. Office of Refugee Resettlement is housed within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So the way the law was changed, it means that ORR, Office of Refugee Resettlement, uses, that's the agency that employs the services of federal refugee resettlement contractors like Catholic Charities of Tennessee. Now, Catholic Charities of Tennessee, who runs the program in Tennessee as a federal contractor at the behest of the federal government, does not currently resettle minors, unaccompanied minors. We don't know if they're going to start. There is, as many people already know, there is a conference call we've heard scheduled for Thursday with federal contractors that do not currently resettle minors to see if they want to start, I guess. But here's something very interesting about the U.S. Office of Refugee Resettlement. It was reported in January that Congress increased the funding for the Office of Refugee Resettlement to $1.489 billion. They increased it from last year's appropriation by quite a bit, actually. Last year it was $1.12 billion. So they increased it pretty significantly. And ORR said that wasn't even enough They needed $1.6 billion more to just take care of the people they had already committed taking care of. That didn't even really account for this surge. But this was interesting, that when ORR said they actually were going to need another $1.6 billion, they said the projected cost was to cover an estimated 26,000 unaccompanied minors. Now, the director of ORR says that the unaccompanied minors program is the biggest program they have. So, you know, now when they said they didn't get as much money as they were hoping to get, that was back in January they reported this, they said that probably what was going to happen was that ORR was going to reduce the federal support for the refugees that were already here because they were going to prioritize taking care of the unaccompanied minors. So it's very interesting that what's happening now in Congress is they're back asking for more money to take care of the kids. Why? Because the border surge has well far surpassed what they thought the numbers were going to be. So, you know, going back to what I was talking about before, that now you've got the Office of Refugee Resettlement really being the ones to take over the illegal minors that cross the border. And what that means is that the Department of Homeland Security is no longer responsible for enforcing immigration law, illegal minors. So for now, what happens to the underage illegal minors, or the UACs, is that the refugee resettlement contractors, who are now responsible for the custody, the identification, and implementing the federal government's release program of these unaccompanied minors. Okay, follow me so far? So, yeah. You know, the question certainly has been discussed that, well, you've got the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and like unlike Homeland Security, you know, they're not experts in doing background checks and, you know, sort of verifying who these minors are and are there criminal records in their home country, different things like that. It's been reported there are some overt cases where they know that somebody's got a criminal record, and those minors are held in detention for extended periods of time. But
yeah, at least for now they are. Hey, I've got to step in just a second.
Sure.
I've got to step in just a second. I've got to do a quick read here. One of the worst nightmares that can fall on America today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit and monitoring service. LifeLock helps protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad that you did. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with Joanne Bregman about refugee resettlement and the situation on our border. Back to you, Joanne. I'll let you take over where you left off.
I want to briefly keep walking you through the process because I think it's going to help us understand how we get to Tennessee and what the impact in Tennessee will be. So, you know, the ORR, the Refugee Resettlement Contractors, take custody of these minors, and then they go through a process of turning these minors over to anybody that wants to show up to claim them. And there are very legitimate concerns, I think, because they don't, ORR does not, the refugee contractors do not make a determination about the people who show up who may claim some kinship or relative status to these minors. I mean, they're not running background checks on them. They don't even determine whether or not those people that come to claim the minors are present in the country legally. So you could just as easily have somebody. And, you know, part of the reports are that kids are trying to cross the border to join their parents who also entered the country illegally. So, you know, somebody shows up to claim the minor goes off with them with a notice telling them that at some point they're going to have to show up for a deportation hearing, an immigration hearing, which would determine whether or not they're going to stay or get deported. You know, depending on the incentive, this minor may or may not show up for their hearing. And actually what's been very interesting to watch is advocacy organizations have really been pushing for full legal representation, taxpayer-funded full legal representation for minors at these immigration hearings, because they've said that the minors who have legal representation fare better and are less likely to be deported than minors that don't have legal representation. So they want
– And that's in our national interest, how?
Well, it's the American ideal, I guess. anyway, so clearly, I mean, I think it's no big secret anymore that the numbers that are coming across the border have absolutely overwhelmed the system, which is why the Office of Refugee Resettlement is trying to find more places to open emergency shelters to move these minors to, which, in fact, we also pay, taxpayers pay, to transport these minors to wherever they need to get to meet up with their intended sponsor or somebody who claims some kind of family kinship to them to pick them up. I'll tell you as an aside, it's very interesting to me that, you know, this particular surge or confusion that's being caused by the surge at the border has really opened up opportunities for the pro-amnesty and the open border advocates to push their agenda. And one of the organizations that is really pushing for that open border agenda is the UN High Commission on Refugees. And they've actually been pushing this agenda for years, which is to actually broaden the definition of refugee. And essentially, if they have their way, and if we actually follow their recommendation of how to redefine refugee, the result at the end of that is there would no longer be any borders. No one would have a border claim, and anybody could claim any sort of version of what passes for persecution, even if it is sort of an economic detriment, and would then be considered a refugee. But the present commissioner over the UN program just coincidentally was the former president of the Socialist International. So we should not be surprised by that recommendation. But I think the bottom line, and let's get to the bottom line and move on to sort of what happens in Tennessee, but the bottom line, for refugees and asylum seekers who are really supposed to be able to prove that they are being persecuted, economic migrants and people who claim they're fleeing from crime are not refugees. They're just not. They're not refugees. They don't fit the definition, and they certainly don't fit within the Refugee Convention, the UN Refugee Convention definition of what a refugee is. I think the other overlay we should be aware of is that last year the Obama administration issued a policy directing immigration agents to try to not illegal immigrant parents of minor children. So, you know, if for some reason a parent of an illegal immigrant who had a minor child in the United States who would eventually grow up to be, you know, one of the DACA or the Dreamer allowances, the Obama administration said, let's not separate that parent from this minor child, regardless of the fact that they're both in the country illegally. Now, that was already that's not people who are currently coming over the border. That was really directed at people who were already here last year when he was putting that DACA recommendation in place. But, you know, I was thinking about it, and I said, so what's really the difference whether you come now or you were here last year? Because they're going to apply the same policy. So for all intents and purposes, the parents and the minors who come over the border now, you know, are more than likely going to be allowed to stay. And certainly if the Congress proceeds down a road of pushing for amnesty. So how does the border surge affect Tennessee, which I think is really what, you know, certainly is relevant to our discussion.
Yeah, specifically, how do we keep them out of Tennessee?
Okay. Well, I think before we get to that, I think we have to understand, like, well, what are the potential, routes? So certainly if Catholic Charities of Tennessee starts taking unaccompanied minors, I mean, right now the state has absolutely no say-so, because I will remind everybody listening, in 2008, when Bredesen was the governor, the state withdrew from the federal program because it is a non-mandatory, it is a voluntary program. The state withdrew. But then the Secretary of the Office of Refugee Resettlement in Washington overrode their legislative authority. I mean, it's my position that they do not have the legislative authority to do what they did. They contracted with Catholic Charities as a federal contractor to run the program in Tennessee and totally bypass the state. So right now, the state has absolutely no say-so, which is why we should be appealing to our federal legislators and our state legislators and certainly the governor, that at this point in time, certainly until the situation at the border, because the expectation, the prediction for the numbers next year are anywhere from 150,000, and I just read another report that said as high as 290,000 next year.
Good Lord.
Now, yeah, and what's important to understand about that is that, in fact, this article just came out last week in Education Week, which is a fairly liberal viewpoint publication. But they said, you know, they made the point, and I think this is a very relevant point, that given the way minors come in over the border and the ones who come unaccompanied and are then released into, you know, to a relative or to a sponsor or to somebody residing in the United States legally or illegally, that person who has that minor is now required to enroll them in public school. So these minors, anybody under 18, will be mandated to be enrolled in public school. And you know, who knows when they will have their deportation hearing or not. Maybe, maybe not. Could be years. And as you, right. as some people may know, be aware, in Tennessee, there's no requirement to be legally present in the country to enroll in public school. And, in fact, the schools are not required to verify that, except to prove residency, which can be, you know, a utility bill, something like that.
Yeah.
So the kids, I mean, it's already being reported, they're starting to show up in public schools. Well, once you open that door, then you have the requirement to provide English language learner services. The only figure that I've been able to access was in 2012, the state, there's a state required component for ELL services, and that's state money and local money combined was a total of $70 million in 2012 for ELL services. Now that's 2012. So you could expect to see a pretty significant increase in those expenditures, and those are considered mandatory expenditures. Well, you know, other communities have reported that when they've had to meet the mandates of their ELL funding, they've just had to pull the money from other programs. So, you know,
yeah.
I mean, there's a limited fiscal pie, even though the federal government agencies like ORR that advocate for open borders, they're also advocating for kind of an open fiscal environment, that there really is, it is a bottomless appropriation. Because no matter how much they're appropriated, and the report from this year, no matter how much you appropriate, they just come back and say, well, we need more. We don't have enough to do this. And so, you know, so when we look at, and in fact, there was an article in the Tennessean newspaper last week where Holly Johnson, who is the federal contractor in Tennessee that runs the program in Tennessee, she said that Tennessee, what the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee did, and Lamar Alexander is on that Senate Appropriations Subcommittee, they said that the Health and Human Services could divert about $94 million. They also made a recommendation for a larger appropriation, but they said HHS has the discretion to divert the money from the existing refugee program to address the needs of the unaccompanied minors. And so You know, there hasn't been an approval yet in Congress. We don't really know what the status of the appropriation is going to be or how that's all going to play out. But Holly Johnson, following the Refugee Resettlement Office in Kentucky, which is run, it's run by Catholic Charities also, and it's run exactly like Tennessee. They're sort of kissing cousins. But she said that we're going to lose her office, which has an annual appropriation of $11 million, that's all federal money, would lose about $1.6 million. And here's how the cuts would be would spread out. They would be cuts to programs designed to serve elderly refugees, children in schools, and preventative health care for refugees. And so what that translates into is that the state will have to assume that cost, will ultimately assume that cost, whether or not it wants to, because that's been exactly the model we've seen, where those federally induced costs that the federal government said they were going to cover just are shifted to the state. And that's been the history of the refugee resettlement program. So when these refugee contractors say, oh, the federal government pays for everything, it doesn't cost, the state doesn't pay for anything, well, that's just simply not true. You know, they don't. And in fact,
and a good chunk of school money is from local property taxes, so those go up as well.
Yes. So, you know, there is definitely a roll-down effect. But the Kentucky Office for Refugees, which is, again, exactly like the Tennessee office, they were a little bit more explicit in explaining how the cuts, they stand to lose, what did they say, $2.28 million in federal funding, okay? And here's how they said it's going to play out. They said 2,200 refugee children will lose services in the public school districts. 2,900 employable refugee adults would no longer have assistance in locating employment or learning English. And 3,700 newly arrived refugees would not get basic case management services. So what they're saying is they have absolutely no plans. None of these refugee contractors, they have no plans, even though they're saying we won't have enough money to take care of the people we are bringing. They're not saying that we will reduce the number that we want to bring to, say, Tennessee. And the reason that they're not going to do that is because they get paid for each individual that they bring to the state. So they're not about to cut those numbers. Instead, they've actually gone back to Congress and said, we need more money. And in fact, there was an article that came out. A whole group of Catholic bishops actually have gone down to the border and said, you know, come, because you are refugees. I would say that, The other thing, and then the other reason I would really encourage, I saw the alert that went out the other day encouraging people to contact Senator Corker and Senator Alexander and their federal House representatives. I think add to it your state representatives, your state senators,
state
and for
senator.
That matter, the
yep.
governor, for that matter,
yep.
the governor's office, because these refugee resettlement contractors have paid lobbyists in Washington. I mean, these are multi-million-dollar organizations. So they have paid lobbyists in D.C. And add to that the fact that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is kind of, I would say, working in concert in terms of what their agenda is, because they do support the refugee resettlement programs. They are very much active inside our state house and our governor's office. I think that at the very least, we should use the limited voice we have to express our concern about this. I would also tell you, I think it's somewhat ironic, if you will, that Holly Johnson's organization, the Tennessee Office for Refugees, that is Catholic Charity of Tennessee's largest program, because that's where the money is. And their second largest program is their own refugee resettlement program that TOR, that Holly Johnson, helped fund with the money that they get from the federal government. In 2011, Catholic Charities of Tennessee received over $7 million in federal money, which is about almost 65% of their total income. And in 2012, it went up to 70% to over $9.6 million. And now you know, we don't have, those are taken from the 990s. And, you know, but now she's telling us that in the fiscal year coming up, they're supposed to go up to $11 million. So, you know, and actually the fiscal year doesn't even start until October. So she's really talking about fiscal year 2014 money that they're talking about cutting.
It's a bottomless pit, an absolutely bottomless pit. I'm up against a hard break here. I'm going
to
take a quick break, and if you can stay with us for a few minutes after the break, talk about, I think maybe we need to initiate a no Moss campaign here in Tennessee. Don't go away. We'll be right back after a short break.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No. Not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Concerted Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with Joanne Bregman about refugee resettlement. And, Joanne, how do we keep them out of Tennessee? What do we need to do with the situation?
Well, first of all, I would say, you know, given that the cap that was set for fiscal year 2015 for refugee resettlement nationally was 70,000. Now, you're talking about people who are still on another continent. They're not in the United States yet. They have not been transported here yet. So I would say, first off, the first step is that needs to be suspended, because the refugees that are already here, the Catholic Charities are saying, we're not going to have enough money to take care of them because money is going to have to be given to take care of the kids. Well, if they don't have enough money to take care of the people who are already here, don't bring any more over just yet. The minors that have crossed the border with other illegals are already in the country. So I would say we have to suspend the other to address the issue with the surge at the border and the minors that are already present in the country. So I think that is a reasonable first step, because other people, like I said, they haven't even reached the shores of the United States yet. And then secondarily, I was told that Holly Johnson went on the radio today and said, now granted, they haven't had their conference call yet, so, you know, she may be speaking very truthfully in saying that she doesn't know anything about unaccompanied minors, that, you know, this is not anything she's been advised of, and that may be true. And so I think we hold them to their current status, which is they don't currently take children, obviously because they are not set up to do that. Reports from other places that do take the minors is that they have to provide mental health services, all kinds of counseling. I mean, there are a lot of very specific needs. And clearly Catholic Charities here, running the refugee program, is not set up for that. So I would say take care of the people you've already made commitments to here who you're telling us you're not even going to have enough money to take care of. And until we get the other situation worked out at the border, and let's see what resolves from that, I can only hope that the midterm election is going to bring us some leadership that says, look, we really do have a problem, and we can't just sort of keep funneling people through, with an empty checkbook, with a blank check, because that's just not our reality. And it's certainly not the reality in Tennessee. So I say, people, you got to – I hope it doesn't come to a situation like they had in California, which I read today they just turned back a third busload of people. I would like not to see that be our situation in Tennessee, but given what we're watching happening in other states, I would say Holly Johnson and the Tennessee Office for Refugees can certainly act to avoid that situation, as can our federally elected official. There are other federal Congress people speaking out. Some of them have already stood up and said, look, we've got a problem, but we're not bringing them to my state. And so far, our representatives in Washington have been silent. I haven't heard a single thing.
Yeah,
I know.
That's disappointing, but it's become, our guys don't stand up. They just flat out don't stand up. We definitely don't have any Bachmans or Louis Gohmerts in Tennessee. Or certainly no Ted Cruz's.
Well, one other thing I would like to see happen, which I, on principle, is really a grave error. The federal representatives, our federal legislators, have really allowed the U.S. Office of Refugee Resettlement to define people like you and me as non-stakeholders in the refugee resettlement program. Because every time they gather the stakeholders to talk about the program, it's everybody but people like us. And, in fact, ORR, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, has designated Tennessee a pocket of resistance. And so, you'll love this one. One of the federal contractors, HIAS, which is a Hebrew Immigrant Association. I forget what all the letters stand for. But HIAS, which is one of the main federal contractors, has said that the Southern Poverty Law Center should be called upon to investigate people like us.
Great.
Now for the federal agency to not turn that back and to not respond by saying, you know what, these are taxpayers with very legitimate concerns raising legitimate issues that are worthy of legitimate debate.
Yeah. Joanne, I hate to cut it off. We could probably talk at least a couple hours on this. I really appreciate you coming on and enlightening the audience about this. And, we really didn't even get to a lot of the dangerous aspects of this recent influx and the influx that's been going on for the last 10 or 15 years. But you're right. Keep pressure on our federal elected representatives and our state representatives to keep them out of Tennessee.
Right. And, use your process.
And I hope to have you back on again real soon. I think we need to on this issue.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
Sure.
Take care. All right. We've got, we could talk about that issue for hours. A lot of concern by most of us here in our country and here in Tennessee. Our next guest is Courtney Rogers, and, of course, we'll probably have to pick her brain on this one just a little bit. She's the current State House Rep for the 45th District here in Tennessee. How are you doing tonight, Courtney?
Hi, good evening. I'm just fine, and I could continue listening to her as well.
Yeah, very, very well informed on this issue. Mm-hmm. Like I say, she's probably one of the top three people in the state that are, as far as her level of knowledge about this issue, and I'm glad to have her. Glad to have you. Appreciate your patience, and glad to get you on, and just give you, you're currently the representative for the 45th District, part of Sumner County. Mm-hmm. This is your first term.
Right.
You took out Deborah Magrett your first time around, and that was a great victory. That was a great victory for the state. I know it meant a lot to you, but I've just got to say that was a great victory for conservatives across the state. And we're glad you're in there. Now, you're retired military, and let's talk a little bit about your service.
Okay, well, thank you. I would be remiss. The first thing I have to do is talk about my dad, because he was the first mentor that even took me in the military. He was a U.S. Marine, Ralph Marion Dryden, and he was the presidential pilot for Marine One for Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson. So I was real proud of him, learned to have pride in my country from him. And unfortunately, you know, we did lose him in Vietnam and in 1968. But just a few years after that, I think 4 or 5 years after that, I joined, you know, the Marine Corps Junior ROTC in high school, and then I got an Air Force scholarship in college and became an intelligence officer and then a targeting officer. And that opened up some really good opportunities, because in college I got a degree in international relations, but I also got an extra certification in Soviet studies, which, you know, when the Cold War ended, I thought, well, you know, I don't get to use that anymore. And I tell you what, thank God I have it, because it helps me put other things in perspective. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But some of my best jobs were, I don't know if you remember the Looking Glass aircraft, the
EC-135. I've heard of it, but I don't remember the specifics.
Oh, okay. We were the ones. We were up 24/7. We were to be the we're the air command and control squadrons, you know, that stayed airborne 24/7 in case of a first strike, you know, from the Soviets or from other nuclear forces. And so my function there during the Cold War was absolutely to study, you know, Soviet ideology and offer a response, you know, in the case of a first strike. From an operational standpoint, so I was a nuclear advisor on board. Had a remote tour in Korea. That was a lot of fun. Had another short tour in Panama. Not so fun. That was for, you know, during Operation Just Cause. And I've had friends that, they just loved Panama, but I didn't get to do a lot of the things that they got to do back then.
You had a little different perspective when you were there.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a beautiful country, though. And then, it took me 10 years to get the Puzzle Palace to send me to Hawaii. And that's where I met my husband, Mike. And we had our first daughter. And then after that, we decided to come to Tennessee, because with both of us in the military and obviously being very sensitive to the fact that I had lost my dad, we decided we didn't both want to be serving. So he came to Tennessee, which is where he's from originally, and I joined the Tennessee Air National Guard, my job changed completely. Then I got to be a squadron commander for the Aeroport Squadron, which you're real popular then, you know, and you have two revolving doors in your offices, and you hear about everybody's life. But my last tour was as the Inspector General, and unfortunately, and you know this from your own career, you know, that the last person that anybody wants to talk to is the IG. So I could only have lunch with the base chaplain and the lawyers after that.
Before we get into what got you into politics, I do have to do a real quick commercial read here.
Okay.
ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design. Monday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Mondays at 8 Eastern, 7 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we are talking with State Representative Courtney Rogers. And back to the question of what prompted you to run initially, and you know, why do you want to what motivates you to stay in office with all the pressure of office and sniping and backstabbing and everything else that goes on up there?
Let's see. Well, the good thing is some of that Panama experience makes some of that stuff look childish. You know, it's not bullets flying, so... But what happened was, you know, throughout my military career, you know, we were monitoring against hostile ideologies, and so when I came back, you know, permanently into the States and kind of settling with a family, my view went from, you know, external to more issues within, and I really didn't like what the progression that I was seeing here at home. I mean, I couldn't believe that I had spent an entire career, I mean, my entire adult life combating socialist and communist ideologies, and then I'm watching totalitarianism, you know, gaining root here in America, and us as individuals, we were being crushed. The new collectivism was being shoved down our throats, and I couldn't handle that anymore. And so, you know, I started out trying to write letters to our leadership in Washington, D.C., and telling them about things that I was observing, and I wouldn't get any response. You know, you tried phone calls, and I thought, well, doing my civic duty as a citizen isn't doing any good. And so that's part of what drove me to run. You know, something I'd like to talk to people about just before we go on about me is I'd like to take a couple minutes just to talk about this collectivism issue, because if people think they hear this word collective and they're trying to tell our kids, you know, to be average or to, you know, just everybody just share everything equally. But that is not realistic. I mean, even the collective governments, they have elitists at the helm that are reaping the benefits of privilege, of power, of position, and the fruits of conquest because somebody's in charge. Somebody is dictating to you and me. Right.
Even
there is nothing.
Bread lines for everybody but the elite.
Exactly. I mean, that's why remember the guy from Romania, you know, they discovered his treasure trove and took him out back, and, well, we know what happened to him there. So it's these kind of things, you know, they're trying to teach our kids that some of these ideologies, oh, it's just another form of government. No, it is not. You know, it's basically Americanism is a good thing, and I could go on and on about some of the basic principles in that. But, you know, all my years of experience have shown me three basic truths, and if I get nothing else through your show, it's these truths I want to get through because they explain everything as to why I make the decisions I do or why I take on the legislation that I do. And that is there are three primary things that these kind of governments need or they work to achieve in order to control me and you. And so the first one is they try to destroy the family. They try to redefine it. They try to make it obsolete. I mean, if you look in the 1960 Communist Party Convention, it is their goal to free woman from man, children from parents. And why is that? It's because then the state becomes daddy. The state is the authority. The state is the provider. That's a lot of power. So,
did you say communist or Democrat?
Well, yes. So they destroy the family. In fact, and really our Americans of African descent ought to understand this other piece of what I'm going to say, because as I look at our families, the ruling party, I guess right now, they are Willie Lynching our people. And if you're familiar with that, you know, Willie Lynch was the slave trainer of the stars, so to speak, back in the day. And he taught the slave owners how to control a huge population of slaves with just a few people. And the primary thing, the first thing they did is they took the strongest guy in there and they killed him immediately in front of everybody else. And they arbitrarily just beat one of the youngest and sent him back to his mom surviving. So that was just a demonstration of power. But even past that, more importantly, suddenly the woman, only the woman could speak to the master to get tools, to get food, made the males absolutely obsolete because it was the woman that had the power to go to the master. Well, so here, like in our welfare here in Tennessee, you don't need the male because it's the woman, you know, and some that can go to the state. And so that's, you know, and even in England, they did a survey. The women consider the state a better provider than the men. So I want people to really understand why family is so important as a basic building block in the security of our country and in our way of life. And if I prattle on too long, just tell me. Number two is, obviously, and we've seen a lot of this, they demonize, even vilify success. And, you know, you didn't build that, right? But that is because they require the dependent for their power. They need you to fail. And even Benjamin Franklin, what did he say? It's hard for an empty bag to stand. Well, they're counting on that. And then the last one is they really hate God. They want to censure God because, well, for a couple reasons. One, because they don't want to compete for our obedience. You know, if there is no God, again, they are the full authority. And one statement that I say a lot is that it is difficult to subjugate a people that recognize no God as the supreme authority in their lives. So those are kind of the three big tools of these kind of regimes. And so I'm hoping as people are listening, they're going, oh, so that's why they're doing this, or that's why they're doing that. You know, and why we have things like Obamacare, or why we have the redistribution of wealth. It's all kind of by design to centralize
all part
power.
Of the plan. It's, yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's not random. It's just not by chance. Now,
no.
You know, you mentioned earlier that you would write letters, and you mentioned D.C., and, you know, speaking for myself, for a long time, my focus was on national politics. It's only been in about the last 4 or 5 years that I decided, well, you know, if this is going to work right, the states are going to have to stand up. And so I'm just curious, you know, why you decided, what was your reason for going for a state office versus a federal office?
Well, that has a lot to do with history as well. I chose state level specifically to, a plug for Nike, right, to just say no, you know, instead of just do it, just say no, you know.
Yeah.
Federal government, I don't believe that federal government, it's not in their interest to restore our liberty. That's not part of their plan. I'm a big fan of Dr. Benjamin Rush, and he had explained once that it's man's nature to want to control his brother. And he also said, oh, gosh, I hope I can remember this. He said that people mistake the terms the revolution and the war. The war is over, but the revolution will never end because we have to keep fighting for our rights because, again, it's always man's nature to want to control. You know, the more independence we have, the less power the government has. And every state, I believe, you know, has to decide soon whether to assert their constitutional rights or not. I'm a big fan of Reverend Thomas Hooker, you know, which my daughter's textbook refers to as Thomas Hooker, by the way, because, of course, we wouldn't say that he was a reverend. But one of the things that statements that he's famous for is, God hath given us liberty to take it. Okay, we have to claim it for ourselves. Otherwise, you know, we'll just fall in lockstep and subjugate ourselves to someone who is not our king. You know, we'll you know, bow before an earthly king. And I'm a big fan of Cicero, and he was in the Roman Council in Rome, and years and years ago, and he deduced the existence of God. And what he said was that God, you know, he was big into natural law and those concepts, and he said that God was the author, the promulgator, and the final judge of our laws and in natural law. And it says that our rights, you know, as equals, cannot be altered by Senate or by decree. So, you know, that is why, well, that's because he determined that we were all equal under God. And so we have to, that's what I believe, is that we have to take that position. We are equals. We are not lesser to federal. And the states, you know, we have to stand up ourselves. That's why, because you can't count on anybody to give it to you. I mean, even Nathan
Sharansky. He told us that we were free and we have to make sure the government knows that.
That's exactly right. You know, I do a little sermon thing, and I try to remind everybody that you were born free the moment you received the gift of life. You know, I'm a big Ted Nugent fan. So,
wow, where did that come from?
Well, I guess I just told everybody, right? I'm a big I guess it's too late to take that back, isn't it?
I just did not picture you as a Ted Nugent fan.
But I heard him talk once, and it was so beautiful. And he talked about how, you know, if you get right down to bare basics, you know, when we are all born, we are born just as naked, just as helpless as that guy next to us. What gives that guy next to us the authority to hush our mouths or tell us what we can make or tell us what we can eat, for goodness sakes? You know, how big our drink is. Right,
yeah.
How many gallons you can flush in your toilet. I mean, what? Where does that come from? It's, you know, we are forgetting. We are becoming a state of people that we are seeking permission instead of restricting the restrictions. And that's why I want to stay at state level. We have to stop the restrictions floating down from the state. We just say no. It seems like centralization is a drug. Just say no.
Well, now, so with that mindset, let's talk about some of the legislation that you've sponsored or that you've supported since you've been up in Nashville.
Oh, well, let's see. Well, number one was the Religious Liberties Act. And the reason for that is for our schools, for K-12, and because, I don't know, you had heard, you know, we've heard all across the country how, you know, you can't say Merry Christmas. You can't, if you're given an art assignment, you can't draw anything religious or they'll tear it up. And this isn't everywhere. I mean, it really hasn't been rampant in our schools, though we've had some cases of it. But but we did have a case, and it was just up in Memphis, and a little girl, her assignment was to do a paper on who her idol was. And she chose God. Well, heaven forbid, the thought police came in, and the teacher, you know, said, absolutely not. So she couldn't talk about God and why she loved God and, you know, but she was allowed to do her paper on Michael Jackson.
Good Lord.
Oh, yeah. And but what was really interesting, so I walked up because I really like to touch base with, you know, everybody in legislature, and so I went to Democrat Mr. John DeBerry, and I was telling him the story, and it just gives me goosebumps to this day because his eyes opened up big, and he looked at me. He said, "That child was in my congregation from my church," and he was livid. I mean, in a good way for me.
So we kind of
joined forces on that, and I will forever be grateful for him for helping me defend it in committees. But here's why is it so important. You know, you have the haters come and just say, oh, just, you know, trying to force Christianity down everybody's throat. That's far from anywhere near the truth. My whole objective, and you should have caught, well, readers probably figure this on from what I was talking about earlier as far as political correctness. We cannot teach our young that their right to think, their right to an opinion, a right to speak their ideals can indeed be controlled by government. I mean, the absolute only thing that even the Supreme Court says in schools that schools can control is, you know, lewd, obscene, that kind of speech. But we cannot start training our kids immediately, oh, you cannot say that. I mean, you know, it drives me crazy when people say, oh, well, you should be politically correct. It's so offensive that you would speak in such a way. And I'm like, the offense is that you think that you can silence the entire universe around you so that you only hear what you want to hear. I mean, what would happen to innovation? I mean, I only want to hear that the world is flat. There's no creativity. There would be no innovation. It absolutely kills progress. And so that has a lot to do with my motivations behind that. And you do have to protect the speaker or the expressor, whether it's in art or homework. Because when you say something, it's accountable directly to you, you know? And so it's kind of uneven because when you listen to something, it's not exactly the same. You are free. You have certain freedoms to accept, reject, or ignore whatever you hear. And
right.
So it's kind of uneven there. And so we just cannot silence everybody else. Because it just ruins critical thinking, and it makes thinking actually pointless. Have you ever read, the book Martyred for Christ, I think, is the name of it. It's by a Reverend Wormbrand.
I'm familiar with it. No, I've never actually read it, but I am familiar with it. Now, I've read other books about martyrs, mm-hmm. but I haven't read that particular book.
Wormbrand was a...
Before you get started on that, we are up against a hard break. I've got to take a break. It'll be a couple minutes long, and we'll come back and we'll talk to you some more. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Don't go away. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Representative Courtney Rogers. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
From the Talk Radio News Service, I'm Keely Sullivan. The Obama administration formally asked Congress Tuesday for $3.7 billion in emergency funding to help control the Southwest border crisis. The figure, originally intended to be slightly over $2 billion, is part of a $4.3 billion package that will also provide over $600 million to address wildfires in the West. Secretary Interior Sally Jewell and Fort Worth Mayor Betsy Price announced that more than $40 million are going to be given to state-identified recreation and conservation projects across the nation. The funds will come from the Land and Water Conservation Fund. According to economists from the San Francisco Federal Reserve Bank, slow growth in startup companies is to blame for the even slower recovery in the jobs market. In a research note, Liz Lederman and Vice President Sylvain Leduc blame the housing market crash, which has made it more difficult for people to afford starting their own businesses. Kaylee Sullivan, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with State Representative Courtney Rogers. And Courtney, we'll just take off from where we take back from where we left off from before the break.
I was ranting about speech and thought, I think, is where we were. And I had brought up Reverend Wormbrand. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. But anyway, he was a Soviet dissident. For I think 14 years, and he related a story, which is why I'm so big about freedom of thought and freedom of expression. And he had interviewed, he was ministering actually to a Soviet soldier, and he asked him, and this could have been about anything, and he happened to ask him, you know, do you believe in God? He probably could have said, do you believe that man should be free to earn his own money or to profit? But what the soldier's answer was, and the way it was described, was he looked at him with dead eyes, and he said,
I do not believe in God because the state has not told me to believe in God. And I'm like, ugh.
Wow.
You know, oh, my God. Just, I mean, I can see that face. I can hear that dead voice, total lack of spirit. I mean, I'll be darned if I'm going to let this country turn my children into Borg. Sorry, that's a, you know, Borg from Star Trek. I'm hitting
right,
great.
Right.
Ted Nugent in Star Trek, but you know.
To clarify, that's Ted Nugent, the speaker, not the necessarily the music, but the speaker.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah,
but
okay.
You know, so that's why our precious thoughts, whether we agree with each other or not. And here's the thing: the left needs to consider, you know, that what if some people that they don't like get into power and they turn the definition of what can be said and thought and spoken. You know, it's not all guaranteed to work one way. And that's why it's so important. And that's why the Religious Liberties Bill was so important, because really it was only the students of faith whose expressions were getting beat up in schools. And we just want them treated the same as any other student. You know, they can't disrupt classes. They can't get out and badmouth people in the name of the Lord or anything. You know, they still have to stay
right
on topic. They still have to be respectful. They can't. They don't get any extra privileges. And plus, the laws that we pass at the Tennessee level are nothing new, because this was guidance that has been handed down for years. We just didn't have a law in place in Tennessee that expressed it, so there was nowhere for the people to go, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
So anyway, so that was one. I wanted to preserve independence of thought and expression, because I think it's important for all people. I mean, that's why we serve in the military, so that all people can speak. Another bill I have, I am really big on the independence of people, and I had read a report that ranked Tennessee dead last, I think except for maybe one state, at the very bottom of turning people away from welfare. I mean, and I don't mean like rejecting them from welfare. I mean getting them to an
ability
to...
Getting them off of it once they get on it, right.
Right, right. We're horrible. Once we get them on, we keep them on. It's like we want to keep them there. And... So,
well, now, hold on a second, though. You know, we're not at the bottom on everything. I saw we were number three in corruption, right behind Louisiana and Mississippi. So, you know.
Oh. Yay for Tennessee. And we're like, and we're also the abortion destination of the South.
Yeah.
Yay for, you know. But, I mean, we're a great state in so many ways. We can do better. You know. But anyway, it was really kind of interesting at first when I started researching this welfare issue, because I just was looking at an issue, and my daughter happened to be taking a class, an economics class, and she was saying, oh, you need to talk to this professor. And I called up a professor who had done all of his research on welfare in Canada and in the United States, and wow, he gave me an earful. And then I went and I took a look at that study I told you about, and I started looking at all the other states that were very successful. And I found one thing that they did that we didn't. And so I thought, okay, I'll focus on this one thing. But before I even opened my mouth to say what it was, do I still have you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I guess I must have an incoming call, so it's buzzing. I apologize. But it got me criticism from both the left and the right. I mean, I stood there, and in one committee meeting, I think it was Chairman Turner, you know, got up and said, I mean, I hadn't even opened my mouth. He just saw welfare reform, and he said, I am tired of you guys beating up the poor. And I had also had some more Tea Party types saying, you are going to give away more money. And I stood there, and I kind of put up my finger, and I mean my pointy finger, and I said,
not the middle, okay.
And I just said, my bill doesn't do that. And so they hushed, and they allowed me to explain. You know, see, what happens right now in Tennessee right off the bat is if someone, and these are people that already qualify for welfare, but not everybody that's qualified for welfare wants to come in and take it. And
right.
But sometimes something pushes somebody over the edge. And so, you know, I looked at that, and what happens when they walk into the welfare office right now is they're automatically put, and it's not a lot of money, but they're automatically put in a long-term program getting a certain amount every month if they qualify. Well, that small amount, let's say your car, the classic example is somebody's car blows up, so they can't get to work, you know, or they can't get
right.
the kids to school and then go to work. They're kind of caught.
Yeah.
These little payments don't even help them do that because they'd have to save up for so many months and then be able to get the car fixed, but by then they've lost the job. And so what my
right.
bill does, or, you know, did, was it said, okay, you know, you're qualified. We want to keep you in the workforce. So we will advance you, let's say, 3 months at once. And, of course, there has to be receipts, and it has to be agreed upon by both parties, by the state and by the recipient. And then they can go and do what they need to do, but they have to agree they do not come back for that same number of months. And those months of benefit are taken out of their lifetime benefits. They cannot double dip. Absolutely not.
Right.
And and then the other part of that is when they do that, when you keep them in the workforce, they stay in the workforce. And these people are 40% less. All the studies of where this is done in the successful states, they are 40% less likely to come back onto welfare because they stay in the workforce. They are in sight of other opportunities to progress. You know, but as soon as we lock them in and they are at home and they are on their monthly benefits and, you know, they get further and further away. Right.
Yep.
They get further. Matter of fact,
it's
one study showed that 1%, I mean, for every month that you stay on welfare, it's a 1% less chance of going, you know, of coming off of it. So that's a big ratio. And I'm not without, you know, people thought, oh, you're just trying to funnel people, and then that way, you know, our welfare rolls are less. And that's, you know, that's just not true. You know, you just,
we're getting really
helping.
Close on time. We're really getting
okay.
close on time here. So I'm sorry, but
okay.
let's talk about real quick, if you can, some of the
mm-hmm.
legislative priorities for the next session and, you know, anything
okay.
you want to say about your campaign.
Oh, okay. Well, workers are few but dedicated, so come on down and come up to Team Rogers if you want. Some of my priorities right now are educating people about SJR2, so I'm talking about that a lot, and I'm sure you'll have other people speaking on that. But again, you know, I want to focus on trying to do something with our judiciary, getting, you know, our at least our attorney general an elected position where the people have some representation, and all that depends on where SJR2 lands, you know, Amendment 2 on the ballot.
Right.
Because we would like the people to have their constitutional right to vote for their justices. I'm looking at sovereignty over our resources, such as our coal. I'm working
oh,
with
yeah.
Representative Powers. There's no excuse for us having our coal counties in huge levels of unemployment when there is a world market for our coal. And so I know we're working on that, and that's why I want to be a part of that. Of course, Second Amendment rights and trying to make a business, continuing on with business, making it business friendly, but still, even with that said, not subjugate our people for, you know, as servants, you know, for example, with Common Core, you know, our children are not human capital. You know, the businesses
no.
do have some reason to attract people to them as well, you know,
yeah.
and offer their own incentives to attract a good employment force. So I don't know how we're doing on time, so.
Well, we're really just about out, but, hey, I really
okay.
appreciate you coming on. Enjoyed having you. I'd love to have you back. You know, and maybe, you know, maybe we can get Ted Nugent to come and do a fundraiser for you or something.
Okay, well, just thank you so very much, and I appreciate it. And thank you for all that you do for the conservative voice. I appreciate it greatly.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'd like to say I really – it was great having you on and definitely have you back. God bless you and good luck. We need to keep you in there.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Good night. Take care. Mm-hmm. Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman, Duke Brooks, calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard that Alger has his picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance, and I believe we have our next guest on the line here. Sharon, how are you?
I'm good, Dave, and how are you?
I'm doing fine. This is Sharon Ford, the president of the Tennessee Republican Assembly, and this past weekend they basically did an endorsing committee, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. Sharon, do you kind of lay out the process a little bit and who the TRA endorsed?
Well, I have to say, after listening to Joanne, I think she should have had this 15-minute spot so she could have finished up with what she was talking about. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah, very, very
the
good.
Whole thing about, yeah. Yes, we have, every 2 years we have our annual endorsing, well, it's biannual endorsing convention. And we, like all conservative groups, are a volunteer organization, so it's not like any of us are paid and we just do the best we can do. And because we did have such limited resources, the board voted that we would endorse members only this time, and that was restrictive. But we felt like it was important to make that step because we didn't want to omit somebody and leave them out and have it send a message that we didn't intend to send.
Right.
So the endorsing committee made that recommendation, and the board voted on it unanimously, and then the membership at the endorsing convention actually supported that approach. So the good news is that we have we've got some great members that have been with us for a while and running for office. May Beavers, of course, and certainly everyone knows May. She's been a member of the TRA for several years. Courtney Rogers, that just finished talking with you. Steve Gowries, who is running against Charles Sargent, and our very own Sheila Butt, who is just my hero. She's such an amazing woman. And Keith Savadba and Rory Bricko and Hal Rounds are the Senate and House members that we endorsed. Then
okay.
We did the SEC because, as you know, the TRA has been working on the SEC project for, I guess, nearly 3 years. I wish that it were the only thing that had been on our plate so we could have spent more time and energy on it. But we did have several members that we endorsed. That was Kent Harris in District 3, Scott David Smith in District 5, James Gann, who is running a write-in campaign, and I believe he was on last week with you. He's in District 13. Lance Pearson, District 15, and Francis Arthur, District 16, and I think somebody said that may be the old district, and then Ruth Fennell in Sumner County, who has been a member for a long time as well. But after the way our bylaws read, that after we do that process, then nominations can be taken from the floor. So then there were several people that were nominated from the floor that were non-members that the board and the membership voted to make as, while they were non-members, that they would be recommended because they were ideologically aligned with us. And
now,
that
so,
was...
So you have, what, about 5 or 6 House and Senate members, or House candidates, and 7 or 8 SEC?
Yes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 SEC, 7 House, and then 1 Senate.
Okay, now, when you endorse them, that also means that they get a certain percentage of the PAC money?
Actually, we're going to vote on that Saturday, but the 3 people that are on the PAC board, we've done a spreadsheet and made a recommendation, and so it won't, since there are several people, there won't be a lot, but we will be donating to each of those people.
And, you know, the SEC, it would be great to have, if the TRA took over the SEC, that'd be probably the best thing that could happen to the GOP in Tennessee. So if we could have a rhino-free SEC like we have a rhino-free TRA, that would just be great for all of us.
Mm-hmm. It would be. Santa Claus comes around on the 25th of December.
Okay.
But
well,
the
I'm
good
trying to
news
be
is because
here.
Well, we did. I do think that one thing that we have done, and that was that we, by going to different groups several years ago and talking about this project, there are a lot of groups that began to take hold of it, and so there were more people that were on the ballot for the SEC this time in the history of that elected office. So that's good, and I mean, and whether that was an indirect or a direct or had nothing to do with the TRA, it's all good because we all win by having a conservative SEC. Let me just read off the people that were recommended that were as non-members, and then I'd like to mention a couple of people that unfortunately didn't get on the list, and it was just nothing but an oversight because, again, you have a handful of people that most of us work full-time, and so this is not our full-time job. Dr. Brian Terry for House District 48, and I think that's Joe Carr's, the seat that Joe Carr currently holds. Then these are SEC candidates, Michelle Perkins, District 13, Jim Sandman, and Lynn Davis in District 14, Hanna Horseman and Bomdog Horseman in District 15, and Kathy Bryson in District 26, and Terry Rowland and Sam Harper absolutely should have been on the list, and the oversight was nothing but just that, an oversight.
Yeah, Sam's definitely a great guy. I had him on the show a couple weeks ago. It's solid.
Right.
You won't get any better. Now,
well,
in addition
and,
okay,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, the insane thing is that I met with Sam and had about a two-hour lunch with him probably a year and a half ago, and talk to him about running for the SEC. That's what made it so appalling that his name was not on our list.
Well, I think everybody that knows, anybody and everybody that knows Sam is going to support him. Whether he got the official nod or not, I'm sure he'll get plenty of support.
Right.
We're all going to have to keep
after people about, and that is for people to understand that these positions are on the ballot, and they're going to have to keep turning the page and turning the page and drilling down so that they don't overlook them. Because when you look at the number of votes that it has taken for someone to win an SEC seat in nearly every district, it's appalling because so few people, even in the world of politics, until recently even knew what these positions were, let alone that they were on their ballot.
You know, in addition to getting the right people on the SEC, you know, it's just like anything else political. You could say good things come and go. So let's just say that we took it over with all TRA this year, and 10 years down the line, assuming we still have a country, of course, we had a flip, and we got, you know, some less than conservative members back in there, kind of like what we have now. Do you think maybe there's some structural changes that might be needed for the SEC to kind of, you know, reduce the damage that bad members can do or members that tend to just take orders from the top?
Well, one of the things that I have talked to people about is I've talked to them about the importance of running for this spot, and that is that we need to have a group of people that understand the importance of bylaws. And we need a true set of bylaws. Right now, if you read the bylaws, any kind of meat in them has been stripped out. So it's basically just whatever Chris Devaney says goes. So that would be the one thing. And the other thing is that you need to implement Robert's Rules of Order. Now, I'm certainly not proficient in that arena, but there is merit to it because it gives you some structure so that people can't Shanghai meetings. And when you look at what Chris Devaney did in December, when he had 26 proxies lined up to waive the regular order of business so that he could get something ramrodded through is appalling. And so having Robert's Rules of Order always to be the order of business, I think, would be a small thing, but I think it would be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, using my guess is they're supposed to operate off of that. I mean, I don't know of any organization that doesn't, at least in theory, have it somewhere mentioned that they will use Robert's Rules of Order. I mean, now not all organizations really follow it that closely. But I have a hard time believing that, it's not in there somewhere.
Well, I don't know, but Tom Arnold and I were having this discussion, and we couldn't find anything about Robert's Rules of Order in the current bylaws.
Wow, that's sad.
So,
and then,
I mean,
of course,
you
like
think
you said,
about
there's no
any
real platform either, right?
Well, I think there is. It's called Power and Money.
Okay. Yeah,
and the other thing that so I can, continue to beat up on Chris, but this whole business of the way that the challenges were handled, and you and I discussed this a little bit when I was on about 4 or 5 weeks ago, but I continue to see the aftermath of what he has done, and we have in the 21st Senate where I live, we have 3 people running, and 2 of those people have never voted. Well, they voted one time in the Republican primary, and they were challenged, and Chris refused to take a stand against them. And there's going to be some interesting information coming out very soon about one of them, because I've had a background check done on one of the candidates, and it's not pretty.
Wow. You know, and I remember in the last election here in Clarksville, the GOP establishment candidate for one of the House seats here, they didn't do a very good check on that guy, and they really, really had some egg on their face when everything came out about him. And, you know, I'm familiar.
Week.
Yes, and I'm familiar with the 2 people that you mentioned, and we won't go into the details right now. But I'm like, they don't vet at all. They do not vet at all.
And I may be incorrect about this, but it was my understanding when that was going on that the GOP was given a heads up about that person, and so they continued to go ahead and endorse him. And it was just, and we had a really, as you know, a rock solid, true conservative, a constitutionalist running that should have won that race, and that was Lori Day. Because the TRA supported her. In fact, Glenn Hughes was our president, and he took a leave of absence and ran her campaign. But no, they don't. In fact, I just recently saw a rerun of a program on low-tax Looper, and I hadn't been in Tennessee that long at that time, and I just wasn't following that story. But there's another example. This guy was president of the Young Democrats, and then he decides to run as a Republican, and the GOP gives him $15,000 for his campaign.
Oh, man.
So clearly this is not a new issue for them, and clearly they also don't learn from their mistakes.
Well, hopefully we'll get some of the TRA people into the SEC, and hopefully the ones that were endorsed will win their seats, and maybe we can have some impact on this upcoming session.
Just a brief reminder that we meet every second Saturday of the month, and that's at Dairy King at 306 East Thompson Lane in Nashville. I did go to Memphis week before last and had a great meeting with the Mid-South Tea Party, and I think that we may be starting a TRA chapter in Memphis, which is pretty exciting for us. But would welcome anybody that would like to come out and find out more about the TRA and who we are and what we believe.
Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on, and we appreciate TRA being a sponsor of the show, and thanks for all you do, and you have a great night, and we'll have you back on
thank
again.
Thank you so much,
long.
Dave. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Just when you think you've heard everything, those leftists in D.C. pull something else. They're going to keep on doing it until we, the people, run them out of town on a rail. That needs to happen real soon, by the way. But what about in the meantime? What are you going to do to protect your family, your property, and your sacred rights as an American when the left-wingers try to redistribute food and who knows what else in the name of social justice? Don't wait for the left to turn our world upside down. Get ready now. Make sure you can provide for your family in an emergency by going to the Patriot Depot, America's best-known warehouse for all your patriotic gear and survival needs. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. You'll find everything from the emergency food supplies to the patriotic gear you'll need today and in the future. That's Patriot Depot at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Don't go away. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with our last guest, Big John Smith, who's running for the congressional seat in the 5th District of Tennessee. And we will be right back.
Hello, this is Robin Zanner.
Hello, this is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick for Rad.
Some people think it's fun to drive drunk, but that's unacceptable.
Be smart. If you drink,
don't drive.
Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Michael Behrman, inviting you to join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on The Michael Behrman Show.
Hit me!
Right here on conservativenationmedia.com.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Our next guest is Big John Smith, who is running for the 5th congressional seat in Tennessee. John, how you doing tonight?
How you doing, brother?
Doing
I'm
great.
Doing all
I appreciate
right.
you coming on. Appreciate you coming
Thank
on.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
Now, being involved with law enforcement wasn't enough. Now you want to go make laws. Is that the deal?
Well, it's not entirely like that. The reason why I wanted to go to Congress is because I have a daughter, and I want her to have as much freedom as I had when I growed up. And being a congressman, yeah. I want to help all family sons and daughters be free.
You know, I wish we had more people running for office that was their thought and their mindset. I mean, others will say it, you know, well, it's about this. But, you know, you talk about politicians use kids all the time, okay? But, you know, I want my daughter, my kids to have the same freedom. I think that's great. And I think, you know, if more people had that motivation, this country would not be in the mess that it's in. But, you know, as I mentioned, you're involved in law enforcement. Do you want to talk about your background on that a little bit, and then we'll get back to, you know, what actually prompted you to run and some of the things you'd like to accomplish?
Okay. A little bit of my background. Well, my family, my father and grandfather were policemen. My grandfather was one of the first black policemen in the city of Nashville in 1948 to be a policeman. And then his son, my father, John Smith, was a policeman. And my brother's a policeman. My cousins are policemen. And it's law enforcement.
Got a long line
in my
there,
blood. Huh? Yes, it's. I don't know, man. It's just like it was second nature. But I have a tough job. I deal with a lot of domestic violence, and it's really sad what people are doing to each other today. But if there's any way that I can help keep somebody from getting hurt, I will do my best in duty.
How long have you been a policeman?
I'm a deputy sheriff.
Okay.
I'm the only one in my family to be a sheriff, but my the rest of my family are policemen. Almost going 25 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so you've seen a lot in that time frame.
Yes, I have. I've seen things when my father was alive. Sometimes he used to, you know, take me out with him sometimes just to see what people do. And then when I got into it, I've seen a lot of what people do. I see a lot today what people do. I see how government policy has affected people. And I've always had in the background in my mind about national politics. I got involved with that during the Clinton era when I noticed that President Clinton was doing things that I didn't like trying to attack the Second Amendment and Christianity. And the more and more he did that, the more and more I got involved.
Now, you ran in the last election. You ran in 2012. Was that the first time you ran, 2012?
Negative. I ran in 2010 as an independent. Right now I'm in the Republican Party, but I am a conservative more than a Republican. I was independent. I was conservative then. That was just the first time I ran, and then the second time I ran as a Republican, because it's closest to my values.
Right. Well, at least theoretically.
Well, yes, I know today we have the rhinos and the establishment type. To tell you the truth, my friend, I wish there wasn't no party system. I wish people could just vote for people's – I wish they could just close their eyes and look the heart of a person. Because I believe one of our presidents, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been Washington, who said the party system will destroy our country. And it's doing that now. It's pitting people against each other when Americans should be united in this time.
Yeah, I think parties have probably done more damage than good. You know, on the one hand, though, you do have a platform, and that tells you something about the person. But to me, because of the establishment, whether it's Republican or Democrat, they are not the friends. They're not really concerned about the people. They're not concerned about upholding their oath to the Constitution. And they're really not concerned about what's best for the country. They're concerned about what's best for them and about conserving the power. And, you know, we need people that not only want to do the right thing, but want to follow the Constitution, follow the law, have respect for our traditions, our heritage, and are proud of our country and see our country as an exceptional country. And we just don't have enough people to do that, in my opinion.
Yes, you're right, sir, on both sides of the political spectrum. I believe they call them progressives. And the progressives have one goal, and that is to consolidate power. And the power of the people, they do not have that in mind.
What if you are elected, what are some of the things that you would like to get through Congress? What kind of legislation?
Well, legislation, this is what's in my mind. The United States Congress, especially the House of Representatives, is the closest to the people. They're right there, and the Senate goes a little slower. They take time to deliberate on things, on laws that are created. One of the troubles we have right now is the separation of powers is corrupted. Right now, the executive branch, in my opinion, is going too far with their power, and it is the job of Congress to step in and not let that go far, but they're not doing their job. They constitutionally have a job to step in if something is going out of bounds with the other separations of power. That is my main concern right now, to say no to things that I know that are detrimental to our country.
Yeah, I would love to see them stand up, and they're doing a lousy job. And that's the thing, too. As many, you know, good conservative people as we have in our state, That's not reflected in our elected officials, especially at the federal level. It's reflected more at the state level, not as much as it should be, but certainly more at the state level than what it is at the federal level. I mean, I'm just disappointed across the board. We have two worthless senators, and there's not any congressman that really stands out that much in my mind overall.
You're correct on the I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No. Go. But so, what are some of the? You have ideas for other. For instance, right now, I think one of the biggest problems that we're facing is the situation down on the border, like we talked with our first guest about. And then, so any ideas on that?
I heard somebody say that they could shut down the border in one day by doing some things, but the border cannot be shut down if you have an executive branch that doesn't want to shut down, if you have a DOJ that doesn't want it shut down, if you have our border agents doing things they're not supposed to do, like what they're doing now, instead of watching the border. Yes, what can be done is if the person who was elected to uphold his constitutional authority and the people that agree with him would do their job, our borders will be closed right now. But that is a political problem of why we cannot close our borders. And hopefully people will be elected who will see that our borders undermined it would be a detriment to our country. We don't know what's coming over those borders. They've even said people from Asia has been coming over the border, and we don't know. If we're not controlling that, that could be a devastation towards one of our cities.
Oh yeah, and you know, we have, ever since 9/11, we've set up Department of Homeland Security. We've got the NSA doing all this spying, and they say they need to do these things because of national security, but they don't do the basic obvious thing, which is secure the border. Which is, in my opinion, also, you know, when you have a situation like we're facing in the world today, you really have to be careful about who you let come into your ports as well, whether it be via ship or whether they're flying in here. But I don't see them turning away anybody. I mean, they don't secure our border. They don't secure our ports. It's insane.
From what I gather, Democrats want people coming over the border so they can have voters. And they say that Republicans want people to come over the borders because they want cheap labor. And those factors might be true in the matter right there. But
I think they're both in there.
Their job to not let people come over. Just think of the cities that are close to the border, how the counties are being over. Their budgets are being overrun because they're having to deal with things that they shouldn't have to deal with because the federal government's supposed to come in and take care of that.
Yeah.
The crime. They have people, drug cartels down there. They have people that sell people down there. Then they have people that come in on American land terrorizing property owners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, the Declaration of Independence, one of the things that it pointed out, one of the reasons for our revolution was they weren't protected. As there, things escalated up between us and Great Britain, they weren't providing protection from the Indians. They were actually encouraging the Indians. And then later on, they actually brought, you know, German mercenaries, the Hessians, over here to use against their own people. We've got something of a similar situation right now where our own government is allowing criminals and terrorists into this country. And, you know, in the case of the criminals, they commit murders, rapes, and other, you know, property crimes, not only in the border, but, you know, well inside the border. And we've got more reason now to revolt than our founders ever had. Matter of fact, I think our founders would be disappointed that we haven't already done something.
I think, and this is just my thoughts, it's an opinion, there are people who are in power who do not like our Constitution, in our system.
Yeah.
They have another idea of how they want our country to be. There were two philosophers named Cloward and Piven, and they did some work on what would happen if a system is overloaded. Right now, I believe our system is being overloaded. And then this is not crazy. It has always been in man's genetics to rule over another man. The American experiment is an experiment, I believe, that is a godly experiment to where a man can be free, to be all they can be. But that right there is under attack because of some people's selfish motives. And that's my opinion.
Hey, I got a question for you in a minute, but before I get to that question, I've got to do a real quick read here. America is still the freest country on earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedoms away, and our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalowski, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing doctrine of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution community with Matthew Opalowski is Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with Big John Smith, who is running for the 5th Congressional District in Tennessee. And here's my question. Mac, let me set this up a little bit. You know, John Boehner is the Speaker of the House and has been now for, I guess, since 2010. And he didn't have a good record. You know, he was one of the people, one of the main leaders. He wasn't the House Speaker at the time, but he was one of the main leaders when the Republicans had the House before Pelosi was elected, before the Dems took over in, like, I think it was 06, 07 time frame. Maybe it was 08. And so he was already part of that crowd. Well, I think that the big spending that the Republicans were doing, wasteful spending that they were doing in 2006, 2008 time frame is what led to, 2006 time frame is what led to the loss of the House, and the House then went to the Democrats. Pelosi became Speaker. Well, then in 2010, when we take the House back, they elect Boehner as Speaker, and then they elected him again in 2012. He's been terrible the whole time. And, you know, I think that says a lot about these people, a lot of them who call themselves conservatives, yet they vote for a progressive Speaker of the House. If you were in the House, who would you vote for as Speaker of the House if you were a member of Congress?
Wow.
To be fair here, I haven't, you know, this is not something that I told you I was going to ask. To be quite honest with you, I got an email and somebody suggested that I ask that question. So, you know, I know you haven't had any time to think about it, but, you know, If there's somebody that comes to mind, I'm just curious to see who that might be.
Well, the guy that I wouldn't mind being over the House is not in the House anymore. But there's one guy that comes to mind, and I don't want to make anybody mad or anything, but this guy really impressed me. Who was the guy that was doing the hearings? I think his name starts the last name with a D. Was it the back?
Recent
hearings? Yes.
Oh, Daryl Issa?
No.
Daryl Issa? Trey Gowdy.
No, this is a young. Yes, yes.
Trey Gowdy.
that guy is impressive.
Oh, from South Carolina?
Impressive. Yeah.
Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. I don't think there's anybody you could have suggested that would be better than Trey Gowdy as Speaker of the House. I can't think of anybody that, from what I can tell, is any more conservative. There might be a few that are as conservative and will fight, but I doubt there's anybody that would be any better than Trey Gowdy. Hey, that would be great to have Trey Gowdy as Speaker of the House.
That guy's a straight shooter. I'm not joking. He'll get right to the point. He don't take no Barbara Streisand. I'm trying to be clean here.
Yeah. No, he doesn't. He's an ex. Matter of fact, he's an ex-prosecuting attorney, if I'm not mistaken.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But that's who I would pick,
other,
sir.
Yeah. Well, that would be a great pick. What's some other legislation? Let's talk a little bit about some legislation you'd like to see passed based on what's going on in our country.
One of the things that is bothering me right now was the passage of the Affordable Health Care Act. People's insurance, I was listening to the news, I think. In September, that's when states, they'll have their figures on how much insurance is going to go up. People who has insurance, it's going to skyrocket. They say some, it could go up double digits. You know, the way that they passed that law, and, you know, I think it was Christmas Eve, wasn't it? They knew that people were...
Yeah, I believe it was, yeah.
And
yeah.
pushed it down people's throats when people didn't want it. It was nothing wrong with our health care system. That I would like to see that reversed.
Okay. Well, now, let me ask you, because so many... They voted to repeal it. The House, even the ones from Tennessee, have voted to repeal it numerous times, and, of course... That's something that they always like to, you know, beat on their chest and say, I voted to repeal Obamacare 20 times. But with the current situation, with not having control of the Senate and not having the presidency, the only real way to stop Obamacare now would be defund it, voting to defund it.
Sir, that is one of the things that Congress is supposed to do. They have a the House controls the purse strings. If they had the guts, they would just cut it off. I'm sorry for being so loud. Forgive me.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I'm glad to see a little passion there. That's good. That's what we need. And you're right. Backbone is the problem. Lack thereof is the problem. And that's something that really rings hollow with a lot of people when we hear these politicians go on and talk about, you know, well, I voted to repeal it, but you look, they never voted to defund it. Only a handful of them have actually voted to defund it. And the other thing that gets me, too, is, you know, politicians that get up there, and then when they come back and they tell you, oh, it's worse than what I thought it was. You know, I remember this after the 2010 election. There was the district that I was in at the time was Stephen Fincher. He was the congressman at the time. And after he'd been up in D.C. a little while, he came back and he said, guys, it's even worse. Things are worse than I thought they were. Well, you know, when you tell me things are worse than you think they than what you thought they were, and then you don't do anything about it, you don't have any credibility. But
and they play
that's,
games.
That's what I've seen a lot. Oh, yeah.
There, you know, I've noticed, I'm sorry.
No,
I've
ahead.
Noticed that sometimes these guys, they will vote for something because they know it's going to fail just so they can look like they was on the right side. Today,
right.
We need, this is my opinion, we need leaders who are going to do what they say they're going to do and do it.
Yeah, and do it because it's right, whether it's popular or not, or whether, you know, that's going to cause them some grief from their leadership. That seems to be the biggest problem we have, both here in Tennessee and at the federal level. Is when the leadership doesn't want to do the right thing.
That is correct. This healthcare deal, this is, if you can control, and I'm not crazy here, my friend, if you can control a person's healthcare, I mean, that's the most important thing to a person. You can control them.
Oh, and that's part of the plan, I'm sure.
That is against what America is. I mean, we over here, where we're supposed to be able to control our own destiny.
Yeah. How's your campaign going? Have you had any debates? Have you had any forums? Have you done any internal polls or anything?
No, I haven't done any internal polls, but I do have a debate coming up within the next 2 weeks with my competitor, Bob Rise. I've been doing speeches and walking door to door, putting out signs, that nature.
Are you getting a pretty good response from the public?
From the people that I talk to, yes. But one of the things about my district that I live in, it is Jim Cooper is a, bless his heart, he's a liberal Democrat. There are a lot of liberal Democrats. And one of the things about our district is people's hearts have to be changed. And I'm trying to talk to people to let them know that what we have here, our freedom is at stake.
Well, and it is, and we're rapidly losing it.
It doesn't matter what party you're in. Even if you're a liberal, I'm sure that you want to be free.
You would think. You would think. Well, I think liberals, I think a lot of them assume they will be free, and it's the other people that they want to restrict.
Well, yeah, man, that reminds me of an old book, Animal Farm. Yeah, I don't know if you ever read that book, but...
Oh, yeah, that's been a long time. But
the
yeah.
animals yeah, took over and stuff, and they was trying to go against the farmer because of their own little tyranny they was going into. And then when they got the power, they was doing the tyranny.
Yeah. Power corrupts, that's for sure. Well, we've got about
okay, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, we got about 5 minutes left. So, you know, anything specific, you know, events coming up that you got, website or anything else, you know, specifically you want to hit on, you know, have at it.
My website is www.BigJohnSmithForCongress. I would invite people to go to the website and you can see the things that you can see the inside of my heart on that. On that webpage, I wrote a lot of detail about issues. I have a. I'm going to speak in Cheatham County Saturday. There's a freedom event there, and of course the debate I have with Mr. Rise in a couple of weeks. But that's what's going on here, and I would ask people to look at me, and I would appreciate their vote, because I will.
You know, what counties does your district comprise of?
It comprises of Davidson, Cheatham, and Dixon County.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It was redistricted.
Pretty big chunk there.
Yes, it was redistricted on the last census, and they added two counties. You know, it was basically Davidson.
Okay, so you didn't you work in Davidson, so you probably don't know a lot in Cheatham or Dixon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know a lot of people in Cheatham and Dixon. I've made a lot of friends in those two counties. Election, I carried one county, and that was Cheatham. I really appreciate from the bottom of my heart. They voted me to win the primary in that county.
Great. Now, are you feeling a little better about your chances this time around?
I'm like this, my man. I pray and I do. That's basically.
And that's all you can do, really.
That's right. That's how I feel about that right now. But I would be honored to serve my district and my country, just like I do serving the sheriff's office.
Well, I think the people of the 5th District can be well served by it. And, you know, I hope to have you back on again, and I wish you the best of luck in your campaign. I really appreciate you coming on.
Sir, I appreciate you asking me. It's a real privilege to do this, to be able to speak, and thank you.
Well, thank you, and have a good night, and have a great campaign, and good luck to you.
You too, and God bless, sir.
God bless. All right, that's all the time we have for tonight. We'll be back again next week. We appreciate everybody tuning in. Take care. Have a great week. God bless you. God bless America.